This is the North Sound Energy Week podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. A week in which the First Minister has travelled to the Middle East to promote Scottish energy interests. It was revealed a North Sea rig received a shutdown notice amid safety fears. Donald Trump gained an unlikely ally in his wind farm fight. And two separate reports delivered good and bad news for energy investors. On Sunday, First Minister Alex Salmond travelled to the Middle East in an attempt to bring energy jobs and investment to Scotland. During a week in Qatar and the United Arab Emirates, he was scheduled to meet oil bosses, politicians and business leaders. Speaking before he set off, Mr Salmond told us Scotland has a lot to offer the Gulf countries.
We've got a number of Scottish companies with us, we've got good investment propositions in the Gulf states. But also, of course, these are all countries with huge oil investment funds, we're going to see if we can attract investment into projects in Scotland. So this trip's all about jobs and investment for Scotland. The Gulf states, even though they're rich in oil and gas, like Scotland is, are looking to diversify into renewable energy. And Scotland and Scotland's lead in wave tidal power is well known about, well respected. And there's a good deal of interest in Scottish projects for investment. It's not irrelevant. I mean, this is a business and economic trip. But Scotland is held as a country in the highest regard. I think in a general sense, it helps that everybody knows that when we apply ourselves to issues, then we do it on judicial matters alone and we keep the international politics out of things.
Through the week, he held talks with oil company TAQA about exploring new fields. Speaking to us from his trip headquarters, he said the energy giants are keen to go ahead with a $1 billion investment in North Sea oil over the next 2 years.
We've had a commitment from TAQA, that's the oil company of Abu Dhabi, already involved over the last few years in the North Sea, committing themselves to the same level of investment over the next 2 years. That's $1 billion, so it's not a small sum. They're looking for more. And they're also interested in the offshore wind offer in Scotland. They see that as they know that the energy is going to be required and they've got the funds to invest in it. So there's going to be a lot of joint working there.
North Sound Energy Week.
Meanwhile, back here in the northeast, it emerged a North Sea oil rig was forced to shut down amid fears of an explosion. The health and safety executive served a prohibition notice on Talisman after a series of incidents on the Claymore platform. It was shut down in August following 5 serious gas releases in the space of 2 months. Jake Malloy from the RMT Union says it's one of the most serious warnings ever handed to a company.
Yeah, well, it's quite appalling that you've got a situation where we have 4 gas leaks in the space of 8 weeks, 3 of which were significant and 1 major, as I understand it. And to put that into context, it was the Claymore sister platform Piper Alpha blew apart in 1988 with what would be constituted today as a significant gas leak. And here we have Claymore having 3 of those and a larger one on top of that. As I understand it, they have met all of the obligations of the HSE set them and the platform's up and running again now. Well, a prohibition notice essentially stops the platform from operating. The health and safety executive have took the decision that things are so dangerous that there is no justification for a continued operation of the platform and they've compelled them to shut the place down. Well, we've seen prohibition notices before, but I've never come across a situation where an installation has so many gas leaks in such a short space of time. Well, the gas leaks occurred in a short period of time, but I think what's probably happened is that the initial gas leak has been in the process of being investigated when we've had another and then another and then another, and the HSE's patience has just gone completely and they've said, no, that's it, we're shutting you down now for the safety of all concerned. It's not going to do anything for Talisman or indeed the industry's reputation, because the industry set itself a pretty demanding target of reducing gas leases by 50% before 2003, and that this one instance blows a huge hole in that.
Production on the platform has now resumed. On Tuesday, Donald Trump gained an unlikely ally in his fight against a wind farm planned for the coast off his Balmeddy golf course. RSPB Scotland have joined the objections to the 11-turbine development planned for Aberdeen Bay. An application for the wind farm was submitted to Marine Scotland in August. The tycoon claims it will spoil the view from his luxury course at the Menai Estate, while RSPB fear the development will impact seabirds and rare species in the area. Spokesman James Reynolds admits it's unlikely the two will team up, but didn't rule it out.
Well, we're objecting for a number of reasons. First, because it's not clear what the impacts will be on a range of birds, some of which are internationally protected. In addition, we know that some further bird survey work has been carried out, but results are not yet available. And we feel it's important that decisions are made in full knowledge of all the facts. We want to check that the applicant's prediction of bird impacts are correct. And for that, we need the full raw data, which we've not yet been provided with. Lastly, this wind farm, it's to be a test centre, not just for technology, but also for monitoring its environmental impacts. A great deal of public money has been allocated to this, and we want to ensure that the project will deliver results which can be applied elsewhere before consent is granted. Wind turbines can do, there can be two major impacts on bird species and habitats as well. The first of those is perhaps the more obvious, that's through direct collision of birds with either the turbines or the revolving blades, and that obviously can have devastating consequences for birds, particularly if the turbines are sighted on migratory routes, for example. They can also have a secondary impact through what's called displacement. That basically means that they might be built on a piece of habitat or on a feeding ground for a particular species. Now, throughout the construction phase and when those turbines become extant, the birds that used to use that territory for feeding or breeding or whatever will no longer be able to do so because of the presence of the turbines, and they're effectively moved on, and there might be an absence of the habitat which has been used for the construction, so therefore they have nowhere to go and obviously will fade out because of that. You know, we can't promise that we will drop the objection, but we will certainly be in a better place to advise Marine Scotland, the decision maker, on whether or not the proposals are acceptable in terms of their impact on birds. Mr. Trump has objected to this proposed wind farm for reasons of his own, and we've heard it reported that these include impacts on birds. However, it's extremely unlikely that our stances will be sufficiently close that joint working, you know, would be something that we could conceive of. Mr. Trump's utterly opposed to these proposals. RSPB Scotland objects to the development as proposed, but, you know, we'll reevaluate our position in light of further information and potential guarantees from the applicant on how it could be carried out.
On Wednesday, a report by Citigroup warned renewable energy investors off the North Sea because of plans for a Scottish independent referendum. The third biggest bank in the US say the debate is creating uncertainty over future subsidies for producing renewable power. But the government claim big companies are already investing in Scotland and renewable energy for export. Enterprise Minister Fergus Ewing says £750 million has already been invested, with much more private cash still to come.
In the pipeline, there are renewable energy projects being planned in Scotland, which would generate three times as much as we currently consume in electricity. And of course, much of that, most of that, will be exported to England, where, frankly, they need our electricity to keep their lights on. So there's a mutual need for renewable energy. Citigroup's analysis says we can't afford the investment. One, it's already taking place, and two, far, far more is planned.
But North East Labour MSP Richard Baker is calling for a quick referendum to calm fears.
I'm very concerned that the uncertainty over our constitutional future could cost Scotland jobs. People, businesses aren't sure what independence means. That's why the Scottish Government's got to get on with this referendum. The uncertainty is damaging. I hope no company decides not to invest in renewable energy in Scotland because of the constitutional question. But let's be clear, having this uncertainty over our future, over the referendum, isn't isn't good for our economy, and other companies will be looking at decisions like this. That's why, if we're going to have a referendum, we should get on with it sooner rather than later.
You're listening to North Sound Energy Week.
The next day, a report for PricewaterhouseCoopers in Aberdeen issued a warning of a different kind. Act now to ensure the city's future as a global energy hub. The report claims £376 billion worth of revenue can be generated from the west of Shetland alone over the next 40 years. It calls on the government to ensure a sensible tax system and for the industry to embrace renewables and take a lead in decommissioning. Mark Higginson co-wrote the report and spoke at length with our reporter Rebecca Curran.
Mark, I suppose you should start by telling us a little bit about the Northern Lights report and perhaps some of the key findings.
We've recently prepared a report on the future of the oil and gas industry in the northeast of Scotland and the opportunity that's currently available for the northeast to secure its future for the next 40 years. We think there's a great opportunity for Aberdeen as a global centre of energy, not just oil and gas, for the next generations to come. But we think there are a few challenges in achieving that goal, not least which will be the availability of the talented people and resources that are needed. And these opportunities are not going to just land in Aberdeen's lap. They need to be sought after and good leadership from the city and from the industry working in collaboration is very important.
And is that something they should be doing right now? You know, it's not. You're speaking about the next 40 years and say things like renewables.
Absolutely, the opportunities are there and they need to be grabbed. And the leadership needs to work together right now. I think there is good cooperation between the industry and the city, but it could be enhanced. And some of these, if you take the renewables sector for example. You know, there are many cities around the UK who are looking at renewables as a potential new industry to get involved in. And the skills that Aberdeen have and generated over the last 40 years are absolutely the right sort of skills to particularly in the offshore wind sector, to help grow that industry and provide a benefit for the North East. But the city needs to be aware there are a number of other people chasing that prize, and therefore time is right to really go for it.
And I mean, what about things like, you know, the fiscal regime and everything, you know, to make us attractive as, say, countries abroad? I mean, that needs to be in place too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And we have, I think the government are aware now that unscheduled changes to the fiscal regime make people very nervous. A stable fiscal regime that people can operate over a long period is what's required, because these are long-term investments, they're not short-term decisions. And so we do need a stable fiscal regime. We need some of the questions around areas such as decommissioning and the tax treatment of decommissioning to be answered. But we think the government understands better now that the need for those things to be taken into account.
Just from briefly sort of looking at the report, is there a slight criticism for firms, you know, not yet sort of moving into or trying to grab opportunities in, say, the renewable sector, that sort of thing?
I think there's a danger that people sit and wait and putting plans in place, but the time is now to really go for and grasp the opportunities. I think there are other areas that we've highlighted in a report that we think is very important for the future, is getting a better publicity and making this industry more attractive for young people to want to join. And we mentioned in our report potentially the need for an energy academy, providing skills that the industry wants and that provide great careers for people in the city and for the surroundings.
And yes. What recommendations do you make? You know, what can the public sector do to make sure that Aberdeen is one of the global leaders for energy sector?
Well, I think the public sector, and particularly the local government, has got a very important role to play in both providing a framework in which people can collaborate, providing some of that leadership that I talked about earlier, but also clearly the city itself and the fabric of the city and its infrastructure, and making Aberdeen as an attractive place as possible to want to come to and work in, is a very important part of their responsibilities.
Absolutely. Now, if we can talk about figures, I mean, a massive figure, a £600 billion figure you put on, a potential revenue coming from the next 40 years, is that right?
Well, that's based on a view of UK oil and gas about the available reserves west of Shetland, which could be up to 6 billion barrels. If you take an average price of $100 a barrel at the moment, you know, that's easily to where we get our 600 million figure from. But yes, the numbers are compelling. Besides the west of Shetland opportunities, obviously opportunities going to be further north in the Arctic. There's the existing, continuing the life of the existing North Sea assets. Decommissioning, we think, will provide another potential opportunity of around 20 to 30 billion, and similarly for renewables. So the numbers are big and will provide a thriving industry and a thriving city for many years to come.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, if you want to just kind of summarise, you know, summarise the report, I mean, who should be reading this? Who should be taking note of this new report?
This is a report for all the stakeholders in the city, whether that's the industry, whether it's the education sector, the local authorities, our fellow professionals, all of us who work in the city and have got an interest in seeing the city thrive and survive. I think why we did this report right now is we're very keen and a number of people in the city are, to see Aberdeen have a legacy, a long-term legacy into the future from its, you know, from the great opportunity it's had over the last 30 or 40 years from its oil and gas. We want to see that continue and leave the city as being the prosperous and vibrant place that it currently is into the future.
And I mean, you said earlier, you know, act now. I mean, are there real fears that if people don't, that would be lost?
I think we are pretty convinced that the city will continue in a positive way for a number of years. What we're saying is that with some more collaboration and some more efforts together, we can make this from good to great.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
This is the North Sound Energy Week podcast.